freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Presented by Carter, Volkswagen, and Ballard.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports Station.
And Brook Wire, you are. And Brook, you are.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
Plenty of fire today. It is the Brock and Salk Show in Seattle Sports on 710 and, of course, seattlesports.com. And, yes, the Seattle Sports app. And even on all the podcast platforms out there, all the pesky podcast platforms, come find us and be with us and join us as the Mariners get ready to make some history tonight, according to Scott Service. He's not going to wait. He don't want to wait. They won last night. The Orioles lost again. The magic number drops to one. That means any Mariner win or Oriole loss will clinch the postseason. The Mariners turned that truck around. Remember, it was backing on in the other day. We had the, right. The truck backing up right into the space. The Orioles kept losing. The Mariners kept losing. You're like, oh, geez, here it goes. They're going to back into the postseason here, which is not the way you wanted it to go, right? You were hoping for, you know, a different way of you know, clinching and winning and kind of doing your thing. But you're looking, not looking like that anymore, right?
I don't want to wait another day either, Scott. So thank you for saying it for all of us, if that's the case.
He was right. They you know, he's been saying they were just playing some bad baseball and that they would find a way to turn it around, et cetera. And as sure, right as rain, Mariners, the next two games, come out and do their thing, right? We talked about it yesterday, starting to see some of the signs we needed to see. And then last night, just an epic to end it, right? Or to come very close to ending it, I should say. It's not over yet. It just kind of feels like it's over. I didn't need it, I'll be honest with you. I didn't need the drama last night. I would have been okay without it. I would have been okay with just kind of a 7-4 win. Kelnick homers twice, Haniger homers twice. Perfect.
Nah, chaos ball.
I didn't need chaos ball. I was just fine with kind of closing things out. Bullpen does its thing. You start feeling good about everybody all the time. But instead, you got to go to the 10th, and everybody scores in the 10th, and then you give up a run in the 11th.
Chaos ball is how we got here. Chaos ball is how we're
first and third.
I don't need chaos ball.
JP swinging a line shot off the glove of Young at third. Here comes Moore from 30. Scores. The Mariners win it. The magic number is down to one. Hit for J.P. Crawford off the glove of a diving third baseman, Josh Young. Dylan Moore scores easily from third, and the Mariners win it in the bottom of the 11th inning, a final score of 10-9, and they are going crazy here at T-Mobile Park. They're going through the happy dance right now, and the Mariners' magic number is down to one. All they need is a win tomorrow, and this team is going to the playoffs for the first time in a couple of decades. Holy smokes, what a finish here at the corner of Edgar and Dave tonight.
That game really did have just about everything you would ever need. If I told you going into the game that the Mariners' best pitcher last night, by far, was Diego Castillo, you'd been like, yeah, okay. Yeah,
I would not have believed that.
Okay. In a game where Munoz and Seawald and
Brash.
Marco and Brash, all, Brash is pretty good. But what Castillo did last night, he was fantastic. Worked quick, threw unbelievable sinking fastball. The slider was good. He was dominant last night. If I told you that Jared Kelnick was going to hit not one but two home runs, one against the lefty and one to left field, you'd have laughed in my face. If I had told you that Mitch Haniger, who hadn't hit a home run in basically forever, would hit not one but two?
The stretch of the pitch from Gray. Swing and a belted fly ball way back left center field. Going, going. Goodbye, baseball, Mitch Haniger.
Now, the longest home run hit at the field this year.
Yeah, his second longest of his career.
How about that?
Crush.
He definitely got all that one. It was like a month and a half worth of frustration was all pent up and released into that one swing, and he hit it dead center. We had Goldsmith on, what was it, Tuesday, talking about Mitch and the barrel and how he hadn't been able to hit many barrels over the course of the last month. I think he hit it hard enough and in the exact right sweet spot on that one to make up for any other barrels missed. It was destroyed. Yes. And then, of course, you get what you did late in the game with some heroics. And Luis Torrens showing once again that, you know, he's a big-time player in big spots for whatever reason. Guy had a miserable year.
Just like we all predicted.
And he's had two huge hits in extra innings, first against the Yankees and then last night. By the way, he's my backup catcher right now.
Over Casale?
Yeah, and I don't even think it's that close. If I'm going to the postseason, especially because Raleigh's going to play every day, you don't really need his defense.
Yeah.
You need his bat. Whose bat do you want right now, Luis Torrens's or Kurt Casale's?
Well, Torrens. And Casale's going to leave any day with a paternity leave, too. So,
but regardless, I mean, I take that even out of it. Like, if you have a choice here, I don't even think it's particularly close. Mm-hmm. In the postseason, your starting Raleigh's catcher catches every day. Say that again.
I said I prefer Raleigh's bat just overall.
Well, absolutely. But you're going to need a second catcher, yeah. And you might as well make it Luis Torrens, who can pinch hit like last night, as opposed to Kurt Casale,
well,
who can't.
You just go to extra innings, and then you know you can count on him.
That's your guy.
I was also thinking that Casale's got so much experience with Castillo. That's why
I don't care. Yeah, I don't care about any of that. Honestly, I got to just move right on. In fact, I'm going to let Raleigh catch Castillo next time he pitches because I'm ready for, and that's what, tomorrow, I think. I want to make sure that duo is good to go because I don't think Kurt Casale can be on my postseason roster. So, there's a lot to think about. Who gets the credit right now, right? We'll spend some time on that, I'm sure, next week. But, I go back 4 years to when we heard that Jerry DePoto and at the time Jeff Kingston, who was the assistant GM at the time, and Justin Hollander, who's now the assistant GM, and John Stanton and everybody else in baseball ops got together and said, went around the table. They all, do you know the story about how they all wrote on their piece of paper?
No, I don't.
They all wrote on their piece of paper, what, are you good enough to proceed? And every one of them wrote, no, we're not good enough. We're not one player away. Let's rebuild. And they all agreed to do it, and they did. They traded Robbie Cano. They, moved on from other players. They did all the things that you do when you are stripping it down, right? And then they built up. They traded James Paxton for Eric Swanson, who pitched last night and actually pitched pretty well, right? They built it back up, and now you're starting to, not just starting, now you are seeing the fruits of that labor. It took a while.
Yeah.
It took a little longer than they said it would. Not surprising, because what they said was sort of absurd at the time. But it took them a little extra time. But tonight, tomorrow, this team's going back to the playoffs because of the decision they made to rebuild. And I supported it then. I support it now. Quite frankly, I supported it years before they did it. It was time. The Mariners had never rebuilt in the history of the franchise. They've been rebuilding for 20 years. No, they haven't. Nope. They've been trying to win poorly for 20 years. And now they finally rebuilt, and it worked. Of course it did. Because you came back up with a young group, with Julio, with Kelnick, with Kirby, with Brash, with Gilbert. Those are the guys, with Raleigh. Those are the guys that got you there this year. It wasn't the veterans. The veterans barely did jack squat other than Eugenio Suarez. Haniger didn't really do much this year.
Yeah.
Right? Frazier didn't do anything. Ty France is part of that rebuild, a guy you traded for when you were trading away veterans for young players. It was those guys. It was the rebuild that got it done this year, and credit to them. It's awesome. So when I think about credit, Jerry DePoto is probably going to be at the top of my list, and Scott Servais right there with him for guiding and steering this ship and keeping this group loose and having and helping them deal with the downs in order to get the incredible ups like last night. I thought Scott has managed just a whale of a season again, and I know he's pumped not just for tomorrow or tonight, but for whatever comes next.
No, not me personally. No, I just, I'm always thinking about, the players, and I look back at my playing career, and, when you get this close and how much it means to guys, and, it means a lot to everybody in there. But I think the key point is here, we have a really good team. Obviously, the first to check the first box, you've got to get into the tournament or into the playoffs. And the goal with this club is not just to get in. I know that's the goal for a lot of people in Seattle and the Pacific Northwest is to end the drought. The goal is to get in the playoffs and go deep and win this thing, get to the World Series.
Well, I like to hear that. That's absolutely what he should be saying. And Scott's done such a good job having the pulse of this team throughout the whole season. We'll talk to Shannon Dreher about this in a little bit more specificity at 7:30. And oh, by the way, the station is down there today. Bump and Stacy are going to be on the premises starting at 10 o'clock. And then Wyman and Bob will be down there as well. They have Julio on the show this afternoon, right? How about that? Julio will be coming out to visit and chat with them. So in the midst of a football Friday, still powered by the Snoqualmie Casino Sportsbook, a ton of baseball to talk today. And I am noticing that there seem to be some folks out there that don't quite know what to do with the postseason.
count me as one.
I'm reading the texts. I'm reading my tweets. I'll go through this at, I think, about 7:45 this morning. But I just want to just say, first and foremost, if you go to the game tonight, maybe you've been to college games. Maybe you've been to moments where you think it's appropriate to storm the field.
Ooh.
It is not appropriate to storm the field at a professional game of any sort, and certainly not tonight.
No.
Thankfully, there will be netting in your way if you try to get on the field. It is not an appropriate thing to do. It is not like when the Huskies win, which apparently is time to storm the field, even though you're supposed to bow down to this group. Whatever. It's not like when the Cougs win. You don't storm the field when your professional baseball team makes the playoffs. It's not okay. It won't be fun. You probably will be arrested. It should happen. They're not college kids who you go to school with. They're professional players getting paid to play a game. Do not go near them on the field. Just a little warning to anybody out there who thinks it is that kind of a moment. It's not. On the other hand, it is going to be a party all around Soto.
Oh, yeah.
And all around this city. And it is going to be a blast. And hopefully, whatever happens tonight is just the beginning of a whole lot more.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
The magic number is down to one. Yes, one. And Scott Service says the drought? Doesn't have much time left.
The goal is to win the World Series. And it's not just to end the drought. We will end the drought tomorrow. We're going to. And it's a beautiful thing. And then it's on to the next goal. And this team's got a lot of high goals.
Some pretty great confidence. Tomorrow is now today. And so Scott says the drought ends tonight. Like all things Mariner, wasn't easy and took a little bit longer than necessary. Everything started out great. Mitch Haniger went yard. Then he did it again. Then it was Kelnick's turn. Then he did it again.
Sally's 3-1.
That swing on, driven deep to right. JK got all of that, baby. Way, way gone. A home run for Jared Kelnick. It's 7-4 Seattle. A two-home run night for JK. A two-home run night for Mitch Haniger. It's home run derby here in Seattle. And, oh, man, did he lean on that.
He sure did. Haniger's first since early August. Kelnick's starting to feel it. Unfortunately, it was home run derby for everybody. Mediocre outing from Marco. Rough night for Paul Sewald. Tough defensive play from Crawford. All of a sudden, the Rangers tie it up. They traded runs in the 10th. They tied it up in the 11th. And then JP got to redeem himself.
He can win it here in the 11th. Nobody out. Runners on the corner.
There was partying on the field. There was much rejoicing. It was a pretty great moment. Pretty cool seeing the whole team doing the hokey pokey together on the infield grass. Baltimore loses three straight in Boston, and thus the Mariners could clinch tonight. In fact, they could clinch even before they take the field if Baltimore loses to New York. Amidst the fun, though, pretty great to see Eugenio Suarez back at third base last night, and we're just three games away now from the return of Julio Rodriguez. Yes, remember him? The whole reason we're here, the whole reason this season has been as joyous as it's been. Well, Julio returns on Monday.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Seahawks taking off for Detroit, hopefully looking for a better result than their last Super Bowl there. The injury report looking actually pretty good, with Justin Coleman really the only player who is likely out. Shelby Harris was at least a limited participant yesterday, so chance he could get back on the field. And I'm curious to see if we'll get some Artie Burns, who looked like a starting cornerback before he got hurt in camp. He should be available this week for real. What do you want to see this weekend? Well, how about controlling the ball for a little while, right? March up and down the field. How about winning the time of possession? That means sustaining drives on offense, and on defense, get off the field. It's been a problem the last few years early in the season. They've cleaned it up. Pete, pretty confident that will happen again this year.
I think it's going to be exactly the same in that regard, because we're going to get better. And you just can see it coming. So we're on it. We need to stay with it and keep them, you know, really in the habits of the good things that we're doing and build on it. And then we'll, just like in your golf game, you know, when you get better, you don't really hit better shots. You just hit less bad shots. I mean, that's the same idea. We got to get rid of the plays that are getting in the way for us right now.
Well, good. Let's see it, because that defense has had some real struggles over the last few weeks.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Justin's Bengals improved to 2-2 last night after their slow start this season. They beat Miami, who is no longer unbeaten, but that's not the story, unfortunately. It is the health of Tua Tagovailoa, who left in an ambulance. Apparently, he was released from the hospital last night. If you remember, he seemed to be concussed the week before, but returned to that game, and then he was somehow cleared to play last night. I gotta say, man, seeing his fingers lock up like that after his head hit the ground, I don't usually get too queasy about what goes on an NFL football field, and we've seen a lot of it over the years. That got to me last night. I did not like that at all. And what a terrible, scary situation. The NFL and the Dolphins franchise, I think, are going to have some real explaining to do as to how that went down. Only one other NFC West game this weekend. Cardinals will be in Carolina. The Rams and Niners play Monday Night Football, and I know some will be interested in Broncos Raiders on Sunday afternoon. Bills Ravens as well. That should be a pretty good 10 a.m. game. Two premier MVP candidates there. Kraken improved to 3-0 in the preseason last night. Ryan Donato with the overtime game winner as they complete a little comeback. So there you go. That's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here in the new Brock and Salk Show. Without Brock today, I'm sorry, but we will have Shannon Dreyer at 7:30, and we will have Joe Fan at 8 o'clock, and we will have G Scott moseying on in here at 8:30, and we're definitely going to hear from you guys quite a bit. Oh, so yeah, it should be a pretty fun
Today's
day.
Today's the day for Mariners fans to talk.
How you guys feeling? What's it going to feel like when it happens? Justin, you're not going to cry, are you?
I will absolutely cry. You just saying that out loud made me start to think
about
it.
Oh, come on.
Well, come on. My whole life. I absolutely will. I was thinking about it last night as the game won, and I was like, okay, it's down to one. I'm going tomorrow. How am I going to do this? Every Friday, Moore and I like to talk about, we get out of here as quick as we can, we go home, and we take a nap. Because It's Friday, and the nap can last as long as it wants. And it's like, okay, I'm going to shower. I'm going to figure out what I'm probably going to... I only wear my Griffey shoes on special occasions.
Oh, so tonight is one of those nights.
Yeah, it's a Sunday driver kind of day. I'm going to pull those out, and then I'm going to slowly walk down to the stadium from my apartment at Queen Anne and soak it in. It's a big night. It's the first time that we've stood on this edge, this precipice for my entire adult life.
Yeah.
And the last time this happened, I was sitting in my bedroom listening to like Stained and Linkin Park CDs. I mean, it was a very different life for me. We got a text earlier this morning from somebody that the last time this happened, he was working at a Blockbuster. It's like
a Blockbuster. Yeah, that's not true. Era. That can't possibly be the case. I was thinking about it. Yeah, I mean, 2001. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to kind of think about the world in 2001. And I saw Jake Wittenberg from King 5 tweeting about gas prices being $1.50 and Shaggy It Wasn't Me being number one on the charts. Oh, yeah. And Shrek in theaters. But it was right after September 11th.
Right after.
I mean, think about right after. Right. I mean, like right after, a month after September 11th. It was a very different time, and the world felt different all of a sudden, and politics in the country was different, right? Everyone was feeling together.
Focus
as opposed
was not
to kind
on
of where
baseball.
We're at now. No, but it was too, but it was, you know, on baseball in New York.
Yeah.
Right? With Bush going and throwing out the first pitch, and then the Yankees, you know, destined, of course, to make the World Series, and then somehow Luis Gonzalez coming up with that great, wonderful, beautiful base hit.
Yeah.
It was crazy, man. It was a very, very different time. And I guess when you put it into that context, like, man, it's really been a long time. I mean, I've been living in Seattle since 2009. Mm-hmm. I'm still missing almost half of this drought.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a really, really long time. So Scott says it ends tonight. Jerry will join me next. It is Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
The Jerry DePoto Show, presented by Seattle Pump and Equipment on Seattle Sports Station.
Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, Matt.
Man, 2 weeks in a row. How we doing? I'm glad we're talking to you today.
I didn't put him up to it this time.
Oh, he just did that on his own. Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate that.
Good comedic timing.
You're welcome, Mark.
I'm glad we're talking to you today and not, you know, yesterday or Monday. It's been kind of a... kind of a stressful week, I would think. How have you handled the stress?
Yeah, probably like you'd expect, you know, some days a little better than others, but it really is just a baseball season. And, you know, I keep trying to remind myself of that. You're going to go through highs and lows. And, you know, we've been in the low. There's no question about it. And we needed last night's win to pick us up. But, you know, you're going to go through 10-game stretches like we went through. And I'm hoping that last night was a signal that it's over.
How difficult are those final road trips of a season? I shared with Salk about the final practice of training camp where the cars were revved up. They were packed. They were ready to go. How challenging can a final road trip be, regardless of who you're playing, Jerry?
You know, I don't, in our situation, understanding that the postseason looms, I don't think it was final road trip blues, so to speak. And I do think that that's a thing. Historically, if you are out, if you are eliminated, you go on that last road trip, and a lot of guys are just punching the clock, so to speak. But I don't think our guys were doing that. You know, we got out on the road. We were coming off a very tough stretch of games that we played quite well in. And we were on an emotional high. And I think what you saw was the release. You know, you saw an exhale. And the guys, we got through that series with the Braves. We got through the series with the Padres. We got through that tough run of schedule. And everybody was talking about how easy it was going to be. And all of a sudden we realized, hey, it isn't that easy. And I think that's we have to get back on track. And again, I hope that yesterday was a signal that that's the case.
Yeah, it's an interesting question about just sort of mentality, right? And Brock and I spent a while last week trying to figure it out, right? Is this a team that was, and by the way, we got a lot of positive things to talk about. I'm excited to talk about certainly the Luis Castillo deal and kind of where the team's going from here. But just to kind of finish this part of the conversation, you know, mentality wise, you sort of wonder whether it's a never been here before and trying to finish out, you know, and get over the hump and end this drought. Or is it, you know, as you were just sort of talking about this exhale, okay, now it's going to be easy and maybe you don't concentrate the way you need to. I would think that's got to be both of those things would be big challenges.
It would. And I really do think that this group of players, and you've heard me say it before, they're so resilient. I love this team. I love what they do. And I think they're more in this moment than they are captured, you know, in decades past. And to their credit, they've been great at turning the page as time goes along. And you know, we just got in a bad rut. And, you know, good teams have it. If you look at the current, I guess, the wild card race, the other good teams in this wild card race are doing exactly what we've done over the last 10 games. And, you know, it's representative of the fact that over 162 games, you're going to go through, you know, stretches where you're 4-6 or you're 6-4. And we went through our 4-6.
You know, one of the things about a radio show, Jerry, and by no means am I comparing a radio show to a professional athlete, but as far as relationships with your coworkers, with your co-host, there've been a number of times over the years that Mike and I will talk off the air. Hey, how are we going to handle this? What do you think of this? What do you see and hear before we approach maybe a big conversation with, you know, with you or Coach Carroll or Scott or anybody over the years? Scott, you know, was on the record kind of talking about, hey, for the first time in a while, I had a little team meeting. Does he ping you ahead of time? Does he say, hey, Jerry, how does this sound? Because of the trust and the decades together that you and him have had, do you guys kind of go bounce ideas and messaging back and forth together in those situations?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And it's something sometimes I would say he does, and sometimes he's going to go more with what he feels that day. And sometimes he needs a sounding board. And sometimes he needs to release. And I think that's part of the relationship that we have. And I would say that Justin Hollander is also a great resource for him. It's just bouncing ideas off of us almost in practice, you know, for how he wants to address the group downstairs. And I think this is because of where we are in our schedule, because of where the end of the season lies, and it's, you know, it's just a week away. And as in large part, this is an area where we've not been, and we want to make sure we're doing it the right way and we're attentive to one another's needs. And the easiest way to do that is to communicate.
Jerry, when did you decide you wanted to sign an extension for Luis Castillo?
Shortly before we traded for him. I would say, you know, to be fair, you know, when we were making that deal, this is something that we always had in mind was, you know, the notion of keeping Luis here in Seattle for as long as we could. And it's once we got a chance to know him and watch him integrate in our clubhouse and watch what comes out of his hand every fifth or sixth day, It was a no-brainer. And, you know, credit to Luis for, you know, transitioning easily from Cincinnati to Seattle. Credit to Justin and to Rafa Nieves for getting what I think is a very fair deal done. And good for the Mariners that you know, this has been a great year for us in building foundation for not just 2022, but the years ahead. And Luis is going to be a big part of that. And I'm pretty excited about it.
Jerry, when, and the flip side of this, when and why do you think Luis Castillo decided he wanted to sign with the Mariners long term?
You know, this is, it ran in connection with the deal we were doing with Julio. And, you know, we sat down, Justin and I sat down with Rafa, who represents Luis, 2 days prior to finishing up and announcing Julio's deal. And we had started the conversation about this. Is this a conversation for September? Is it a conversation for the off season? Is it something you'd rather talk about in the spring, or is it, you know, a non-factor for you? Just going to play it out. And he said, you know, I'll talk to Luis, see where it's going. And 48 hours later, we announced the Julio deal, and Rafa called and he said, Luis is fired up. And during that time, we were playing exciting series. We were in the middle of the Ichiro weekend with the Indians, as I recall, and full houses. And there's really never been a more exciting time than late summer to be a Mariner. And that wave of emotion and then finishing off the Julio deal, he said, this is the place I want to be. This team wants to win. And we got a deal done shortly thereafter.
Jerry, was there any thought about, hey, let's get the deals done, we can sign them, but maybe announce them after the season, not in season?
No, I think there's a degree of momentum that comes with getting these deals done. It's belief from your players, it's belief from your fan base. It is stressing that it's not just about the today's game and today's or this season. It's about what we're doing in the big picture. And that's a message that we've tried to really stress over the course of time, is the sustainability of this is very important to us. And doing deals like we did with Luis, with JP, with Julio, bringing Robbie over, that is indicative of what we want to maintain here over time.
What have you seen from Kelnick since he's been back up?
Because we haven't seen his teeth. I don't know if he smiled. You know, have you seen him smile? I'm curious if he still has his teeth.
Yeah, I saw a smile. I did see a smile in Oakland,
okay.
But and when he first arrived, but it was a brief glimmer. I would say that this version of JK, and this is a praise for what he's done, is the best version that we've seen. And this is a week running. We've not seen it over the course of time. But his final month in Tacoma, we started seeing some real signal that he was doing a lot of the things that we had hoped he would do, which is, it's all about pitch selection. It's all about approach. It's not just about hammering the fastball. It's which fastballs you swing at. And I think we've seen real maturation with Jarrett. And, you know, it's part of the reason why we brought him back. The fact that he brings energy every day, we thought could really inject something at a needed time into this team with the injuries to Gino and to Julio and Cal at the time. But more importantly, over the course of that 4-week stretch, Jared was doing a lot of things in AAA that we think represented, or he is showing us that he's ready for this next opportunity. And I think he's looked great since he's been back. His at-bats, you know, have been terrific. Last night he got a tough draw with Martin Perez in multiple at-bats, and I thought the last at-bat of the night was one of our best of the evening. And in general, I think he's looked like we would have hoped he'd look a year ago. And like I said, it's nonlinear. Sometimes it takes a little time.
Can you envision a scenario where Julio comes back and Kelnick remains in the lineup?
Sure I can. You know, and that's a lot of it is going to be based on lineup construction. But, you know, I think you'll see Mitch out there, and it's good to see him over the last couple of games, you know, finding his way on base and getting it going a little bit. We do envision Julio back next week, which is an exciting thing for a team that really has been driven by his energy for a lot of the year. And Jared is showing that he deserves that opportunity. You know, how that balances out with Jesse Winker, with Sam Haggerty, with Dylan Moore is going to be up to Scott's creativity and lineup building. But I do think there's a chance that that's a possibility.
Hey, Jerry, how much different is it today than 10 years ago, 20 years ago, maybe when you were pitching and everything else? Salk brought this up yesterday when it comes to Jared Kelnick, because it's not just as simple as you coaching Jared Kelnick, right? And say, hey, this is what we want you to do. Jared Kelnick, like many of these guys, I'm sure has swing coaches and people he works with as an agent. He was a top 10 pick. How much different is it dealing with the team, the army of players cast around them today than it was, say, 10, 20 years ago?
You know, some players don't have anyone at all, and other players have, you know, a fairly sizable posse that work with them. And what we adopted, and this we did, you know, back in 2016, and when we first arrived, we sat down and as part of our, you know, first connection through player development with our major league players, was letting them know that we wanted to be engaged with their people. You know, it could be their PT, it could be their hitting coach, because everybody's got one. And to the extent that our players were comfortable with us becoming a conduit there, to make sure that we're speaking the same language, that we have the same goals, and that we understand what our players are trying to achieve. Because if there's a different agenda working in the background, sometimes it can be very difficult for us to make progress. So we try to make that a part of what we do with every player. Some guys are more engaged than others. And I would say by and large, we've done a very good job of what I would call modern communication with players and their group.
Jerry, we've talked a lot about this team being a home run hitting team. Scott mentions it often, right? You know, that's sort of been the way this team has scored most of their runs this year. As the weather cools off here, you know, we often talk about how baseball is two games, right? What you get during the summer and then what you get in late September and into October when the weather changes. Do you have any concern just about the ability of the team to keep hitting home runs without the weather being hot?
No, I really don't. And part of that is because I think if you look at the history of the postseason, that's how you score in the postseason. You know, and at the end of the day, I think the long season is always about consistency and balance. You have to find a way to put runs on the board. You have to find a way to keep runs from scoring. It's a catch the ball, all of the things that we talk about routinely. Once you get to the postseason, it's about power. And we have power on the mound. We do have power in our lineup, and you're going to get the occasional walk. You know, I think the walks will slow once you get into the postseason. They're just not as free because you're playing against the best teams in the league, and they're less likely to walk you. But the home run becomes prominent because when you're facing the Garrett Coles and the Justin Verlanders and the Logan Gilberts and the Luis Castillos of the world, you don't string a lot of 3 and 4 hit innings together. And historically, postseason baseball is about that 2 or 3 run homer and the pitcher on the mound who can make it hold up.
Well, the guy that we saw elicit mighty, mighty power in a home run derby, as you mentioned earlier, Julio, expecting back baseball activities here in the next few days and hopefully back on Monday. Can you give us any detail on what is going on with that back of his?
Yeah, you know, we calmed it down. I think he's in a good place. He reports feeling better every day. He's going to start some baseball activity today. And, you know, that'll be the first time since we shut him down or he came out of the game in Oakland. And when we put him on the IL, it was very much a conservative move. And I think Julio was on board with it. We just wanted to take the 10 days and make sure that we got this right. And I think he's comfortable with where he is right now. We'll see, you know, where this trends over the course of the weekend, but we feel like it is running on course. He's eligible to come off the IL on Monday. And right now we're loosely hoping that that's the case.
I remember at the combine in 1998, they wanted to, I had to do all these battery tests and they wanted to do an MRI on my back. And I was like, nope, you've got 52 other x-rays. I've got more radiation in me. I'm not going to do, I remember calling my agent, Jerry, walking in the hallway, like, you know, Marvin, what do you think I should do here? I don't want to know what's going on. I know I've had back tightness in the past and everything else. Was there a level of concern, curiosity when you MRI any athlete's back?
Yeah, not to the extent. I mean, I, like you, I've had back problems for decades. You know, it's actually what ended my career. And I shared that with Julio. I told him, hey, this will pass. It's the first time he's ever really dealt with that. And really, it's the first time he's dealt with much outside of his wrist and his young career. So, you know, it was new to him. I think it was shocking that he felt the way he did. Our general take on it was that primarily it was something that was happening in his upper glute, and it was just throwing some residual pain or irritation into his low back. And again, I think through treatment and rehab process, we've gotten it where it needs to be. We don't have long-term concerns, and we're not going to put him back out on the field until our short-term concerns are eradicated.
Speaking of health and being in the field, Eugenio Suarez yesterday, I don't know if he was joking or not, saying that he could play the field as soon as today. When could he realistically play third base?
Today. I think he's going to play third base tonight. And I think that is it's wow. exciting for us because it just gives us a chance to have so many different, as we talked about the idea of JK playing more routinely once Julio's back, you know, that's obviously predicated on Gino's availability as a third baseman. And it was great to have him back in the lineup the last 2 days. I thought he looked awesome last night. He is such a big part of our team, and not just the productivity on the field, but the emotion that our team drives our team. And having him back was terrific. Having him back at third base is going to be awesome for our team in regard to, you know, what it means for the next, you know, 8 or 9 days and then headed into the postseason. He's a very important player for us. He's also proving to be a pretty tough one. You know, it's that what he dealt with is, it's small, but really painful. And to watch how quickly he came back and was able to swing the bat pain-free and has insisted for a couple of days now that he's good throwing. And our people see that. Our doctors are on board with it. So I think he's going to play defense tonight. Mm.
And what was great was to see him deliver with runners in scoring position early in that game yesterday. I think just kind of... Everybody took a sigh and said, okay, we can deliver with people out on the base. I had a baseball buddy of mine ask me this question and wanted me to ask you this question, Jerry, so I will. Is hitting with runners in scoring position more about talent or mindset?
I think it's about mindset. And it's, you know, one of the best of my generation and one of the best we've ever seen is Edgar in that category. And, you know, through the years, listening to Edgar talk about, you know, how you hit with runners in scoring position is you stay in the middle of the field. And, you know, I think you saw it last night with Gino. And sometimes that's going to be represented by the pitcher or decided by the pitcher with the locations that they give you to hit. But, you know, if a player goes up with the mindset, especially with less than two outs, that I'm going to stay in the middle of the field, you got a lot of space to work with. And, you know, that's what Edgar did for years, is just stay between the gaps. That's what Gino did last night. And frankly, if you hit that ball on the ground and it turns into a double play, it looks like any of the last 2 weeks of Mariners baseball where you're frustrated by not getting that run across the plate. But if you stay in the middle of the field and you drive the ball, put the good swing on it and hit it hard, the result is, you know, what we saw last night. And I think that's a rule of thumb with the runners in scoring position is, you know, unless you get that early pass and you can hit it out of the ballpark early in the count, stick to the middle of the field. And that's what's made Gino such a big producer for us this year, is that he, by and large, he's done that.
Hey, Jerry, do you remember where you were when Mark McGwire broke Hack Wilson's NL home run record?
Oh, gosh. Here we go.
I do. I was standing in the bullpen in Colorado. I was playing for the Rockies, looking up at the big board. Because like every other ballpark in the league at that time, they showed it.
Well, which one? When he broke the NL record or when he actually got to 62?
No. When he actually got to 62.
Oh, okay. Because I saw a lot of celebration about the AL record last night. And I thought that was a thing we'd always done, where we celebrate each league's home run record.
I did not know. I don't. I have not stamped where I was when Mark McGwire passed Hack Wilson, okay, as evidenced by my reply.
I was just checking because I look, 61's a really cool accomplishment, but baseball's got to figure out how to handle that era, don't you think? I mean, it feels like everyone's sort of talking around the real conversation and the real issue there.
Yeah, I do, and maybe that's true. And I think part of that has been played out over a few decades of kind of talk radio and MLB Network. And having lived through it and baseball at that time, you know, we considered as the players on the field, we considered that real baseball. I have a hard time believing that it's just not acknowledged as having happened, but you know, it happened. And I say that, and I don't want to take away from what's happening with Aaron Judge right now. It's, you know, it's a magnificent thing, and to celebrate it is appropriate. I think to ignore the fact that something else happened with players who at the time were doing things that were better than the other guys on the field. And, you know, how legitimate that was is up to somebody else to decide. Obviously, it's kept all of them out of the Hall of Fame for whatever reasons, and maybe justifiably so. But it did happen. You know, I was there. I gave up a few of them along the way. And it's tough not to acknowledge it. You know,
I know Scott was behind the plate for 62. I sorry, I didn't mean to cut off your story. Where were you? Were in the bullpen for 62?
Yeah, in Colorado. And I remember vividly the guys, everybody walking out and leaning on the fence, looking up at the big board because they stopped games around the league and just put it on the big board and showed the home run.
It's pretty cool.
Hey, I got to sneak one last one in because I like your little history every time we've done this over the last 3-4 weeks. If I were to put Anthony Munoz, 2022 Anthony Munoz, in that bullpen in Colorado when you were standing in years ago, and you watched a guy throw 102 and then a pinpoint 92 mile an hour slider, what would you have done?
I would have run around the end like James Brooks after taking the handoff from Ken Anderson, I think. But if it were Andrés Muñoz who threw that pitch, I would say phenomenal. You just don't see guys doing that. And, you know, I fist bumped him last night after the game. And, you know, the slider that was coming out of his hand last night of what is, I think, the best slider in the league. But the slider coming out last night was the best we've seen from him. And, you know, he smiled and said, I hope it stays like that the rest of the year. But he's such a humble guy. He's had an awesome year. And yeah. And last night was about the best we've seen him.
Jerry, thank you. Much appreciated. We will talk next week, right? The season will be over by then, right? Or right just about to end when we talk next week. Yep. So we'll see. Magic numbers at 3. We'll see where we're at when we talk next week. Thank you, Jerry. We appreciate it.
All right, guys.
And now that magic number has dropped to 1 after the Orioles fall again yesterday. And, of course, the Mariners win last night. They did win last night. And that was the third most exciting thing that happened in that ballpark. We'll tell you what 1 and 2 were next. It is Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.